Thank you. Please be seated. The court is ready to hear argument from relator in credential.
May it please the court, Mr. Luke Ashley will present argument for the relator. Relator has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, this mandamus proceeding involves a challenge to the July 19, 2002 order entered by the presiding judge in the County Court of Law Number 3. That order denied relator's motion to strike a jury demand that had been filed by the real parties in interest in this commercial lease dispute. The effect of that order was to invalidate a contractual provision contained in the lease, the commercial lease agreement that was at issue in that lawsuit. The basic challenge that was urged by the real parties in response to our motion to strike that jury demand was that such a provision would be violative of the Texas Constitution and violative of Texas public policy. That is an issue that has not been directly addressed by this court. It was raised 10 years ago in the Riverview Associates case, but not reached in that case. It is an issue, however, that we believe has been subsumed within other cases that have been decided in Texas. There are jury trial waivers contained within contractual provisions, such as arbitration agreements, that have been enforced in this court and in the lower courts of Texas. The issue has also gotten considerable attention in jurisdictions outside of Texas, and the overwhelming majority of courts that have considered the issue outside of Texas have enforced contractual jury trial waivers like this one, some of those decisions in context very similar to this one. Relator's position is that the court should do the same. Otherwise, Texas is going to be clearly outside the mainstream on this issue, and there are no circumstances in this case which would justify refusing to enforce this particular provision.
Okay, here's a problem I have. You've got two different agreements here. You've got a lease agreement and a guarantee agreement. I haven't read this particular guarantee agreement, but typically you don't have any defenses that you might have under the lease. I mean, the defenses against a guarantee are different than defenses against a breach of lease. They're two separate causes of action, even though they're part of the same transaction. The fact that there is no similar clause in the guarantee agreement seems to me that at least the individuals would have the opportunity to a jury trial their guarantee defenses, which are different from the lease defenses. Why would they not be?
Well, as developed in our brief, Your Honor, this is part of an integrated transaction. The guarantee does contain a provision that specifically incorporates obligations the guarantors and makes them subject to the provisions of the lease agreement. It was all part of an integrated transaction, and because they are subject to the provisions of the lease agreement, then the jury trial waiver would apply to them as well.
So then it would be just the incorporation language then. I mean, if there were not the incorporation language, would your argument be different? I mean,
well, it would be a different, slightly different argument, but again, they're part of the same, it was all part of one integrated transaction.
No, I understand that. I guess the problem I have with that is even though it's part of one transaction, since the elements of the causes of action are different and the defenses are different, I don't automatically presume then that there's a waiver in one as there is with the other.
Well, I think it's a separate issue as to whether the guarantors are subject to the jury trial waiver. The fact that even if they were not, that wouldn't invalidate the jury trial waiver as to Italian Cowboy, the limited partnership.
And I wasn't going there. I was just saying if we were to find the jury waiver valid, but strictly has to be strictly construed to bind only the parties to that agreement, it's hard for me to see how just the fact that they were all signed at or around the same time would make any difference if the nature of the causes of action are different, the defenses are different, and the parties are different.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think it's a separate issue, and I think we rely upon the relationship and some of the language in the guarantee to support our claim that the jury trial waiver applies to them. That issue is very similar in two of the cases. I believe it's the Connecticut Supreme Court case and the Massachusetts Court of Appeals case that we cite in the brief. In both those situations, I believe there were both leases and guarantees involved, and the jury trial waiver was enforced against all parties in those cases. The underlying case itself is really a garden variety commercial dispute. There's nothing particularly unusual or unique about the issues that are involved in that lawsuit. It's a lease dispute over some property in the Keystone Park Shopping Center in North Dallas. The Italian Cowboy Partnership was the one that actually filed the suit first. They sued to try to avoid their obligations under the lease agreement, claiming constructive eviction, and there was also a fraud claim in connection with the condition of the premises. The Valators responded. Prudential and Prism Partners, Prudential's leasing agent, sued for breach of the lease and for enforcement of the guarantees. The case was originally set on a jury docket for a non-jury trial, July 17, 2002. There was a jury demand filed on February 22, 2002. Then there was an agreed continuance and an order entered shortly thereafter that reset the case to September 30, 2002. That order did not specify whether the reset case was on the jury or non-jury docket. But when the court issued a letter on April 1, 2002, that clearly reflected that the setting was on the jury docket. Prudential then filed the motion to strike the jury demand. There was a June 14, 2002 hearing at which there was some brief testimony and some documentary evidence offered. That documentary evidence demonstrated that the Seckys were represented by retained counsel, that actually there were seven drafts of this lease that were negotiated between the parties over a five-month period. There were a number of provisions, and in fact that's reflected on the final and executed copy of the lease itself. There are a number of provisions that were actually changed and to the benefit of the tenant in this situation. But the jury trial waiver provision was in each of the drafts and was not changed from the first draft to the final draft. On June 19, 2002, the trial court signed the order that denied the motion to strike the jury demand, and this mandamus proceeding followed. The basic positions of the parties present a stark contrast. The real parties take the extreme position that the Texas Constitution provides an absolute right to jury trial in a civil case, and that that party cannot contract that right away, apparently not in a pre-suit situation, although they concede that if there's a decision made after the lawsuit is actually filed, that a jury trial waiver is valid under those circumstances. If a party does contract it away, their position is that that contractual waiver is essentially unenforceable and can be reneged upon at the option of the affected party. Our position, on the other hand, is that the constitutional right to jury trial, while it exists and certainly is important, that it must be balanced along with the constitutional right to freedom of contract. And there is nothing unconstitutional about enforcing a pre-suit contractual jury trial waiver. That's a private agreement and between parties in a civil suit that is perfectly permissible.
Do you believe that such a waiver needs to be conspicuous?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that there are any particular conspicuousness requirements that would apply here. Our position is that the ordinary rules of contract interpretation should apply to these agreements as they do to arbitration contracts, as they do to insurance contracts, and that unless the legislature were to make some determination that a particular type of contract that contained a jury waiver needed some special attention or ought to have specific requirements, that the ordinary rules should apply, and that if such a decision like that needs to be made, then the legislature would be the appropriate body.
So all our law about indemnities being conspicuous is kind of wrong.
No, but there certainly is a different history on that law, Your Honor, and also in this particular, I think the distinction in my mind in that situation is that There certainly are some different historical antecedents to that, but also that involves a transaction where there's a release or of substantive rights or an assumption of substantive obligations, and that is simply not the situation that's involved here with the waiver of a procedural right.
Is it important that the caption to a paragraph accurately describe what's contained in the fine print?
Well, I don't think that the, I think as a matter of general contract drafting rules, certainly that's desirable and appropriate. I don't think there's any misleading, anything misleading about the caption involved with this specific provision in this
if
case.
If it said the rights of all parties to jury trial guaranteed, that was the caption, and then the body was, you waive your right to a jury trial, would that be misleading?
I would think that that would be potentially misleading. Again, that's not the situation here.
Mr. Ashley, let me broaden that inquiry the Chief is following a little bit. You pointed out that the right to a jury trial is important. The Constitution says it is inviolate. I'm not aware of any constitutional provision that says the right of indemnity is protected by the Constitution. However, the right to a jury trial is. Shouldn't we therefore consider some heightened requirements? Maybe that the party should have read the provision, maybe that it should be conspicuous or something else when we're looking at a waiver of a constitutional right. And I understand the arbitration arena and the choice of form selection clause arena, we've said that we have not imposed such requirements, but should we take a look at some of those issues?
Again, Your Honor, it seems to me there could be policy choices in particular situations that might be appropriate. I don't think this is one of them, and I think that's, in general, a job for the legislature, not for the court. If there is a particular circumstances where there's a heightened risk that somebody would be adversely affected, here again we've got a situation where the parties involved on the other side of this transaction had negotiated at least three leases previously. They had an attorney negotiating this lease for them. They went through a five-month negotiation period with seven drafts.
And certainly in consumer transactions, they were sophisticated and they were not misled. I understand that. And there may be some basis for your position that the legislature can prescribe exceptions in the Constitution. Article 5, Section 10 talks about exceptions to right to jury trial, at least in some circumstances, being prescribed by the legislature. Should we take that a step further and say in these types of instances the legislature should determine if a pre-suit waiver is valid or not?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand the last part of the question, Your Honor.
Well, let me phrase it differently. How far does your argument go? What if there's a post-trial waiver in a contract? Parties went to trial. The provision said that if the award was more than, considering cross claims or counter claims, more than $1 million net in favor of one side or the other, both sides agreed that they would not abide by that, but would then go to arbitration. Could the parties do something like that post trial?
I don't know of any reason why they could not, Your
Honor. Even after a jury trial.
And
that's because of their right to make an agreement
in advance to limit their I think in general, that may be close to a liquidated damages type of clause, which could be subject to invalidation as a penalty. But again, I think that presents different issues and affects substantive rights more than the procedural rights here. Actually refer to Article 5, Section 10 and the interpretive commentary to that. What the commentary notes is that civil suits relate to an effect as to the parties against whom they are brought. Only individual rights which are within their individual control and which they may part with at their pleasure. And I think that's really what the situation was here. This was a provision that was fairly bargained for, and that Texas should join the majority of jurisdictions and enforce those provisions.
Mr. If we get into a situation where, because of different arrangements, agreements that people enter into freely, that jury trials become rare. Is that okay? Does that cause you any concern?
In the civil context, if they become rare as a result of private parties' contractual agreements, I don't think that's something that really is a... I think that is something that is not necessarily a bad thing. I think it is up to the parties who are involved and participating in that situation to decide whether a jury trial is too cumbersome and expensive or not, and if they are not under some sort of disability, I think they have the ability to make that decision, and it should be enforced.
Counsel, the respondent in this case is no longer in office.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Has either side approached the successor judge about this ruling?
Has either side done one, Your Honor?
Approached the current judge?
No, Your Honor.
Has there been any motion to substitute parties?
There has not, Your Honor.
Should the court give the new judge an opportunity to rule in this before the court proceeds further on the mandamus? Or do you have a position on that at all?
Well, I haven't looked at that specific issue, Your Honor. It does seem to me that the mere fact that there's been a subsequent change after the proceeding had already gotten to the Court of Appeals and was already pending in this court, that it's appropriate for this court to review the issue. There would be no real reason for the, and certainly out of the normal course of events, for a successor judge to come in and just review any decision that that the predecessor judge had made.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to have an argument from real party.
May I please report, Mr. Luke Madol will present an argument for the real party in interest.
May it please the court, good morning. Justice Wainwright, if I could address one thing. Article 5, Section 10, the exceptions that are mentioned by the legislature, I do not believe are exceptions to jury trial, but rather are exceptions to when a fee must be paid for a jury trial. And I want to make sure that I said that. And such language does not appear in the cognate provision governing county courts, Section 17. It's clear that it's the fee that's being described there. So I would submit there's no jury trial exceptions in Article 5, Section 10, but only fee exceptions. Like when I was a prosecutor for the government, we didn't have to pay a fee to subpoena witnesses and so forth and so on.
And I don't know that I disagree with you. Case law, as cited in surveys by the parties around the country, indicates, as I recall, that only Georgia and the courts, the highest courts in these various states that have addressed this issue, disallows pre-suit waivers of jury trials. And federal court in Texas has said that it's unusual, a bit extreme. Why should we follow down the path that's been labeled extreme and unusual?
Your Honor.
By your former law partner.
Your Honor, let me first say, I was the one that brought that case to the attention of the court, and it was my former law partner. I was highly disappointed. But I deny this as extreme. In fact, if I leave here without having impressed upon this court the weightiness of what they're being asked to do, I will be a failure. Because what this court is being asked to do and to treat this, and I appreciate the questions about the conspicuity and all the author behind requirements, but this is an extremely weighty question. As great as the King Ranch is to Texas history, this is more important. This is by far the most serious case this court is considering today. And I'm asking the court to be in the mainstream of the history of jury trial. And I submit that the cases, I was the one that cited the LR annotation. They didn't, to point out that there were 24 to 1 against us on jurisdictions that have considered this question. I'm not dismayed by that at all. I submit to you that those decisions are shallow, they are uneducated, and ought not to be countenanced by this court. Your Honor, there is a question that precedes the problem with these courts and those decisions is that they treat the right to a jury trial much like waiver, a presentment on a note. And, of course, a lot of these cases come up in the context of a note, a lease, or now they're talking about putting them in employment agreements. And they will become rare. The jury trial is fixing to be wiped off the face of the earth in commercial litigation.
What do you mean fixing to be? Judge Higginbotham, you may have heard or seen at the last Fifth Circuit conference, gave the latest statistics that there aren't any jury trials in the federal system, and the circumstances are not that much different in the state systems. They're down to 14 or 15 a year per judge in the federal system.
Well, Your Honor, there's a lot of illness in the jury system, but I submit the illness is because we haven't done what's in Article I, and that is pass laws to purify them and perfect them. It's not the jury system itself. And I would like to say that the preceding question and what's wrong with these decisions that have gone the other way is they treat the right to jury trial as not a matter of public concern. But if it's like a presentment in a note or the suretyship defenses that you mentioned, exoneration, the old common law, and therefore can be a matter that bargaining parties can put on a table. But that's not true. This is a matter of public concern. And this court has all, and if when you have a matter of public concern, then those aren't subject to contracts in the same way that a mere private right of parties is.
What about arbitration? How does that square with public policy? This is far less draconian than arbitration.
I would not agree with that, Your Honor. This is not far less draconian. The arbitration, as I argue in my brief, is an opt-out. It is an opt-out. This very clause that this court is being asked to rule on not only rips Rule 216 out of the book, it says when you ask for a jury, you get one. It rips that out. If you'll read it, it says when they sue us, we can't even file a counterclaim against them when they sue us for writs. So it ripped Rule 97 out, too. So that's what the judges asked to be.
But with arbitration, you don't even get a book.
That's right, Your Honor. But, you know, the taxpayers of Dallas County aren't paying for that arbitrator. They aren't paying for the rules. And when you do arbitration, you can decide what the rules of evidence. You can decide how many arbitrators are. The parties decide. And I will point out that in the history of arbitration, Your Honor, arbitration, when it first came up, was declared against public policy as ousting the courts of their jurisdiction, and then specific statutes were passed to allow that. And that's true of Texas arbitration and federal arbitration.
But here, you're allowing the same, I mean, you're setting your set of rules, because basically what you're saying is we're agreeing to a bench trial, and the rules of civil procedure are going to apply. So you are, in effect, agreeing to the rules of the game by doing that.
Your Honor, they have. If you read that clause, read 14.16. It says, in the event the landlord commences an action for nonpayment of rent, tenant shall not impose any counterclaim.
That's not before us today.
But it shows the intent, and it also shows why this is a public policy issue, Your Honor. It shows that if you say that the parties can contract with to what constitutes the tribunal, a judge and a jury, that can't stop there. It can't stop that they can't repeal Rule 97. It can't stop that they can... I mean, let me pull some other examples from the Constitution. Suppose, in a note, you say, I waive my right not to go to prison for debt, for not payment of a debt. Can you do that? Or is that a matter of public concern? You would think the fact that it's enshrined in our Constitution makes it a matter of public concern.
But it is true in most jurisdictions non-jury trial can be obtained much more swiftly than a jury trial.
Your Honor, I mean, this is sort of like saying since elections are inefficient, we ought to do away with elections. The jury trial can be made to work. I'm not saying there's no ails in the jury trial. But that decision as to whether the parties should want a jury trial or to go non-jury should only be allowed, and our Constitution really only contemplates that it should be allowed once litigation is commenced.
Why is that? I couldn't tell from your brief if you agree that a Rule 11 agreement could waive a jury and be binding.
Your Honor, I would not. From my brief, my position would be no. That the only way you waive a jury is in accordance with Rule 216. This is a matter of public concern. This court, in its rulemaking authority, as it derives from the Constitution, though that's the only people that have the right to say how jury works. And so, if you don't make a demand under 216, there is no jury waiver. And that's what the Constitution says. Demand received.
You make an argument in your brief that ought to be a pre-suit waiver. But you're not saying, you don't, the argument doesn't say this, but you're not arguing besides that you could have a post-suit waiver by agreement. You can only have a post-suit waiver if you just don't request any time.
That's right, John. Right. And I would say that Holloway, the case, that old Holloway litigation that was in Dallas so long, was the one court of appeals case which obliquely addressed, and I argued that in my brief, that they seemed to say that there was a post-agreement settlement that said that the court said if you think that was a jury waiver, you can't confer fact-finding power in the court.
So the trial court says, look, all right, this is a complex litigation. We're going to do a scheduling order. I want you all to decide by date certain whether you're going to have a jury. It's 6 months away from the trial date. Is that in the parties agree in writing to in a Rule 11 agreement for waiving the jury? You're saying that's not enforceable.
Your Honor, I would say this court should say no. That the jurisprudence that is already established under 216 should be the yardstick.
So you're saying this court should put limitations on the parties' rights to contract where that right, the right to contract, is protected in the Constitution. What are the limitations, counsel?
Well, Your Honor, it seems to me that there's...
I mean, outside of illegal and criminal conduct, what are the limitations in your mind?
Well, it seems to me that this is a matter of public concern. So certainly anything in the Bill of Rights, such as I use the example in my brief, could the parties agree that someone could not testify for want of religious belief when our Constitution says they can testify, even if they don't have any religious belief? If you can't waive being in prison, but certainly those things that are in the Bill of Rights, like jury trial, ought not to be the subject of private parties. And this court has answered that. I mean, let me point out,
why isn't arbitration unconstitutional?
Why isn't it? For two reasons. Number one, it is not an attempt to obtain public justice on terms the parties try to dictate. That is, it is an opting all the way out.
If we interpret the Constitution the way you say, I don't see that there's an exception for arbitration.
Arbitration addressed also in the Texas Constitution.
I don't believe that it is, Your Honor, but is it?
Well, what was the public policy reasons in the transition from the Texas case law in the 1800s from not recognizing arbitration to recognizing those cases? I mean, what the court, I mean, obviously you said it ousted the jurisdiction of the courts, and for a while it didn't enforce arbitration agreements regarding, you know, that were made pre-suit or, you know, before your liability arose. Yes, only after you have a cause of action could you, have it enforceable. What was the reasoning? Was there any reasoning, or was it just conclusory?
I'll have to confess. I looked at the thing in general. I did the sort of corpus juris, American jurisprudence, history of arbitration. I did not analyze the Texas case in particular. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
I did not.
There are old, it's not our constitution, but there are old constitutional references favoring arbitration.
That's right, Your Honor. And if you read the texture and the corpus juris, it says that the idea was for areas. Trade areas. Like, for instance, I would submit that arbitration works well in the security areas. Repetitive, same issues where the customer, on those customer brokerage disputes, that's probably one area works well. Part of the reason you're seeing this push to have this court validate jury waivers is because in a lot of areas it works terribly, and it's known to work terribly. And it's known, particularly in the labor area, that the arbitrator has to be arbitrary or you can't get picked by either side or be eliminated. So they don't like that. They don't want to get away from a jury because they don't want a fair and impartial tribunal. They don't like arbitration.
The judge is not?
Your Honor? And that's why it is I'll submit that the best book, and I don't have time to, but I would urge anyone who's talking about this jury to read this book, The Jury, by Lloyd Martin, Tool of Kings, Palladium of Liberty. And if I run out of time, I'm going to ask you to let me say one point out of this. But in his chapter, The Summing Up, he compares the bench and the jury trial. And it is a magnificent chapter and very pertinent to this question. And he makes the point, and I tried to capture them myself, that a jury has more members. It's not known until trial. They are challengeable for cause. A limited number can be eliminated for concerns of unfairness. Their period of service is short, and they have no agenda or ambition except for one case. These are matters of public concern, not private parties to a contract. They are impervious to, he doesn't use the impervious, that's my addition, but less subject. But I say they are impervious to extrajudicial influences like campaign finance, like favoritism, like trading justice. I had the privilege of practicing for at least two of you on this court, and you all know what I'm talking about. They can't be part of the lawyer's club. They don't have hardening of the categories. It is the people of the state of Texas, by constitution and by statute, that should be able to say, we want the judge and the jury to be the tribunal to find factors. It should not be the lenders. And I've been slammed for demagoguery because the truth of the matter is,
I'm trying to follow your logic here. You say, never, 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 unless you decide not to pay the jury fee, that's okay.
That's right, Your Honor, but there is a qualitative difference. There is a quantitative, there is both, between a post-litigation decisional waiver and a pre-litigation contractual waiver. Let me just start. For one, you're doing one at a time when you know what the dispute is and when you know where you want to be. At the other time, at the time of getting a loan, and I found that these are in loans now. They are in the deeds of trust in Dallas County, Texas. I bought one of them. They are in employment agreements. I got an employment flyer for the March 2000 Texas employment.
Well, if the lease agreement said arbitration, they're okay. I mean, I think that's what we're all struggling with, because all of these agreements now have arbitration clauses, and we enforce those, but we're not going to let judges try.
Your Honor, I'm trying to articulate why it should not be a struggle. Why the idea that arbitration means we should be able to agree to a bench trial, it is a non sequitur. I'm trying to come up with the right logic. It's a non sequitur. An arbitration does not implicate the same public concerns. We have a specific statute in Texas in which the legislature has said there is a public interest in parties being able to agree to the rules of the tribunal, who the tribunal will be, but they don't implicate the Constitution or the public institutions. They don't ask people to, they don't, it's really.
What if it said, we agree to binding arbitration before a trial court according to the rules of civil procedure?
There are some times when federal judges, for instance, have been selected as arbitrators outside the court. I mean, it's not a court proceeding. It's outside the court.
What if it's in the court? What if this agreement said, arbitration provision, the parties hereby agree to binding arbitration, and the arbitrator shall be the judge of a trial court that any case will be filed in, and the rules of arbitration will be the rules of civil procedure?
I can't imagine that the courts would validate that. I can't imagine you get to take a public servant and drop him as a private.
I've seen contracts like that in the offshore area particularly. They designate the federal district court closest to the geographically closest to the well, and it will be tried before that judge in a non-jury trial. And that's a common, or arbitrated before that judge.
I can't imagine the private, that's sort of like saying the prosecutor will be my lawyer or...
Well, but what if the agreement did say that? You'd say it would be unenforceable because
Your Honor, and this apply, and this is directly analogous, for the same reason that I can't adverse possess against a sovereign. I've got a little farm. For the same reason I can't build a peach stand on the right of way. For the same reason I can't advance my fence, agree with my neighbor to put my pipe down in the Biloxi River and take water out of it. It belongs to the public, and you can't dictate by contract that a judge who's on the public payroll is now going to be your arbitrator. You can't do that. And I can't imagine any court in the land would allow
that. Well, Mr. Madole, I agree with you that the parties by their agreement can't confer jurisdiction on the court. So they can't, the parties can't agree that the 101st District Court will have jurisdiction to resolve this dispute. They might agree that if we have a dispute, the venue will be in Dallas County or something, but I'm not sure that's the same thing as the parties saying that if we have a dispute, we agree to have a bench trial on it and not a jury trial. And the weakness, it seems to me, of the argument is in fact the recognition in our rules that a party, by their inaction or by their late action,
can be forced to give up the right to a jury trial. And I, that's how I view this failure to pay the jury fee in time, the failure to make the jury demand in time. We say, you know, you can lose your right, this constitutional interest in a jury trial, by your waiting too long to make the request. And once we've identified that it's just not an automatic thing getting the jury trial, I'm not sure that we can say that the parties can't, in advance of their litigation, decide among themselves that I'm not going to demand a jury trial.
Your Honor, I would, and Justice Owen asked me the same question. I didn't think. Here's the difference. Number one, I've got a case right now down here in Austin where we didn't elect a jury. It's mainly a legal issue, and we're going, it's mainly a legal issue. I've got a case, in this case, it's mainly a fraud issue where we want the jury to assess the credibility. But that's very different when I am thinking about the case, the litigation, the issues. I've done discovery. I know the score. We're equal before court. We're being governed by equal rules. That's extremely different from when I want a loan and we're friends, when I want a lease and we're friends, when I want an employment job, because that's a job, to continue my job. That's a very different situation to say the people of Texas and to think it's really going to be equal and the people of Texas are going to be conscious of everything that's involved in a waiver. Waivers are supposed to be knowing and intelligent. You can't have a waiver of litigation that you don't even anticipate at a time you're trying to be friends, and they've got what you want. Those are qualitatively and quantitatively different. The recognition in our rules recognizes only that there may be, in the context of a case, that the parties can make a valid and open assessment. And again, I've been accused of demagoguery because I said it's the prudentials of the world and that sort of thing. And I do think that. But I don't think it's demagoguery unless you want to call Sir William Blackstone demagoguery, because he says that. He said that back in 1776.
Okay,
I've got the quote.
You. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Please, Court, here's what seems to me to be the bottom line. If you sort through all the rhetoric, there doesn't seem to be, while the position is extreme, even Mr. Madola concedes that at some point, in some way, that a litigant can waive their right to a civil jury trial. What we're disagreeing on is when they can do that and possibly how they can do that. But if this had been so important, then this is something that the lawyer for Italian Cowboy should have negotiated over and should have raised this at the time that they were going through the seven drafts of this lease over the 5 months of negotiations.
If there had been no lawyer, would you result any differently?
Well, my answer to that is no, but in this particular case, it clearly should have been raised at that time. And if they weren't able to trade and work out an acceptable agreement on that, then they could have gone and sought other space and negotiated with another landlord. But the fact of the matter is that Texas, while it does protect the right to jury trial, it also treats parties to lawsuits, treats parties to contracts as adults. And that, except in special situations, you're presumed to have read and understood the agreement that you signed, and you're bound to live up to that.
What kind of parameters should we put on it? There's a recent case out of the Northern District of Texas. Are you familiar with the Powell case?
Yes.
That talks about four factors, unequal bargaining power, and would you object to analyzing it under those four factors?
Well, I think in this particular case, we can satisfy that knowing voluntarily intelligent
standard. Would you object to applying those factors?
I don't think that there is any need or any reason with respect to these sorts of agreements, just like there's no reason, no need to to apply special rules with respect to choice of law clauses or arbitration agreements other than the normal contractual rules. As I said previously, our position is if there really is a perceived special need in special circumstances, consumer transaction, something like that, that is a decision the legislature would make. But in other contexts, this court has, even though there is in fact a disparity of bargaining power in a consumer context, enforced similar types of provisions. And so I do not believe that there's any reason in this particular case to apply any special standard. But if they did look at some special standards in this case, this is not a particular, I don't think there's any reason to invalidate this particular jury waiver. Arbitration is not a total opt-out.
Mr. Ashley, let me change your direction a little bit here. Article 5, Section 10, which we talked about with Mr. Madoli, he mentioned, and I'm not sure I disagree, that the mention of legislature regarding jury trials there is with regard to their ability to limit exceptions or prescribe exceptions to a jury trial in addition to not paying a fee on time. However, Article 1, Section 15 of the Constitution says the right of trial by jury shall remain inviolate. The legislature shall pass such laws as may be needed to regulate the same and to maintain its purity and efficiency. Should the courts be involved in this, or should the legislature be making these decisions?
Well, again, my position is, Your Honor, that with respect to these types of provisions, that the ordinary rules of contract construction and the ordinary defenses that you would have if you are improperly induced into a contract would be sufficient protection. If there are additional protections needed in specific situations, that's a matter for the legislature to address.
Is your position consistent with this specific language that the legislature shall pass such laws as may be needed to regulate the same?
Well, the legislature obviously has the ability to regulate that, but I don't think that this waiver issue simply is not, I don't think is addressed in that language, nor is it addressed in any of the cases that they have cited in their brief. There absolutely is nothing in those cases that talk about how important the jury trial right is, that is dealing at all with a situation where somebody has signed an agreement to waive that right.
Thank you. That concludes the oral arguments for the day. The marshal will adjourn the court.
All right. Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, now stands adjourned.